It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hi, thank you everyone for tuning in to the UGA Sports Live Podcast here from Champions on Baxter. Got to say thank you first and foremost to 11 Live Sports for letting us be on their page. 365 Game Day, where you go and get all your gear. It's 365gameday.com. You just click on Georgia, get to all the stuff you need. Thank Cable East out in Statham. Guys, you can't even buy anything from Cable East. They sponsor our show without any hope of monetary recovery. So we got to thank those guys, you know, Robert Wallet there for doing that. And I want to get back to the first question we have for this show.
Yep.
The first one that popped up was which Georgia players could play for Alabama? And
the,
I thought it was good.
The evil team.
Yeah, well, because I think if things go as expected, Georgia wins the East, Alabama wins the West.
Sure.
Georgia's last real claim to glory was the 2012 SEC championship game, which they, you know, go back to 5 yards short or whatever. That's the measuring stick.
Yep.
Now, you get rid of Mark Richt, you bring in Kirby Smart from Alabama. He's recruiting like he did at Alabama. He's getting all these great recruiting wins. And, you know, the question has been debated ad nauseum the last 15 years. Was it Mark Richt or was it talent? You know, why does he win a title? Why does, you know, all these other teams win a title when Mark Richt didn't? Did he not have enough good players? Was it bad coaching? And I think a good way to assess where you stand in the program, which Georgia players right now could play for Alabama. Now, at the end of this recruiting cycle and the end of the season, I think we'll have a different question altogether. I think, but where it stands right now.
Yeah, I think right now, like, says an answer, but I said in another, like you said, at the end of this recruiting cycle, I think in 1 year, 2 years from now, it's going to be completely different.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, it'll be different, but you'll be a lot closer. But the fact is that Alabama has signed the number one recruiting class for 17,000 years. I mean, it seems so. It's really tough. But let's not worry about, you know, their overall class.
Sure.
That's tough.
Sure.
Give me the players who
I'm going to start with Trent Thompson.
Trent Thompson would
that's
be
an
one.
Easy one.
I mean, but, I mean, you
that's
got,
a good one.
You got, I mean, you got Hand on the other side. So, I mean, he's unbelievably great player, but as long as Thompson can start at the other end of the line, I'll put Thompson that's up there.
I think they lost a lot of talent. I think Roquan Smith could. I think he's a different type of linebacker that Alabama doesn't play with normally, but Pruitt loves his size.
Yeah.
He loved him here at
Georgia.
Well,
Pruitt wanted him back.
Yeah, exactly. I think Roquan could. I mean, obviously, Nick Chubb and Sony would definitely see the field in some
They would
capacity.
See the field, but
they
maybe
would,
not.
But are they the starting tailback?
I would start Chubb. Yeah. But I mean, over Scarborough and over Harris. But I mean, but it wouldn't be that far apart. So
correct.
I would get Chubb.
It's a tough call, and I know we all want to say, well, and you know, we saw Nick Chubb earlier this week squatting 600 pounds,
unreal,
on a surgically repaired knee, a knee that was, you know, less than 2 years ago was absolutely destroyed. Remember, people were saying this guy won't even walk normal.
Yeah.
And he's back, and not only
600 pounds,
and he squatted 600 pounds, freaking running back. But to that point, Alabama has some great running backs.
Oh, yeah.
I think if Nick Chubb was over there, he could play for him. But
okay,
in other words, that would be a great game, a great depth chart race to watch.
I would say Isaac Nauta would start over. I mean, you lose a great tight end that Alabama had. I'd say Nauta would have that.
Isaac Nauta.
I think so.
And here's the thing.
So.
For all you people that are going to say, well, Roddy just crapped all over Forrestall. No. I think Miller Forrestall is a hell of a player.
Yeah, but.
But I like Isaac Nauta better.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Miller is a fantastic talent. I remember seeing him when, you know, he and Trevor Lawrence were just destroying 7-on-7s. And he can catch anything that you throw his way. But Isaac's got some beef on him.
So we've got two for sure. Trenton Thompson and Nauta.
Roquan.
And Roquan. And three.
Three. I would go out and say Dominic Sanders.
Okay.
That's a
And now we're getting to where you're getting to.
But so you can name three off the bat, and then you're getting, you know, well, what about, you know, Nick Chubb?
We did have somebody in the chat say not Dominic Sanders, so you're not the only one thinking that.
I mean, as long as Minkah Fitzpatrick could be somewhere in that defensive backfield, that I mean, maybe you just put Fitzpatrick and Sanders in the backfield, and that's all you have to worry about.
And here's another name I'll throw at you, and it's going to be tough. Let's say you stick in Charlie Warner.
Okay.
And again, here's my thing. A guy that hasn't really seen the field for Georgia. So
okay.
But the point being, I think it's based on potential. Charlie was banged up last year, so he didn't get to play a lot early on. So he got that issue. So let's say a healthy Charlie Warner, I think Nick Saban knows how to use that guy.
I think you're looking more, though, now at Alabama's weaknesses, which is tight end, than Georgia's complete strength.
Yeah, but that's the thing. True, and they've had great tight ends. I mean, O.J. Howard,
but
all those guys.
But O.J.'s gone now.
Yeah,
so
exactly. That's what I'm saying.
That's where a spot's open at Alabama.
Right. And so maybe you could squeeze it in.
Correct.
Still, we're looking at like five.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
Now,
you could make an argument for five.
And what about Eason?
Okay. Last year I mentioned during the when we did the show, I said, if Eason had five-star offensive linemen, if he had the receivers that were catching everything, and then Jalen Hurts had Georgia's team with the drop passes and the spotty offensive line, would we be saying Eason is one of the better quarterbacks in the nation, not Hurts?
I think you're spot on.
Hurts is, wasn't he like the entire NCAA offensive player, rookie or freshman?
But I definitely agree with that.
If you had five offensive linemen and receivers that caught everything.
If he was behind that offensive line with those guys, I could see it. So the reason I wanted to bring that up is, practice starts in less than a week. All this stuff will come up. But where are you now? What happens on the recruiting trail? It all matters. I mean, if we start looking at the guys in this freshman recruiting class who haven't played, maybe – when we do this show in December, before that early signing day, let's say after the SEC championship game, and we're talking on that the December 14th show, let's go ahead and mark it. Let's ask the same question, seeing these guys play for another year. I mean, does all of a sudden Riley Ridley turn out to be one of the top wide receivers?
Turn like his brother?
Yeah. It's like, hey, he could play like Calvin. You know.
So what are we going with? Because Dave's a stat head. He'll remember this.
Somewhere between 4 and 6.
4 and 6.
Okay.
And what are we going to say in 2018 and 2019?
Well, that's completely different. Yep. Yeah. But I'm thinking, I would just like to see, are there any freshmen in this class that you can add to that list?
You know who?
We can't add any of them yet.
Correct.
That's not fair.
You know who Jeff Fulford just said in the chat? He said he thinks Ledbetter. Ooh. Ledbetter was heavily recruited by Alabama.
He was.
And if the Ledbetter comes through that we all think the Ledbetter can come through, he looks really good right now in terms of his weight. I've seen pictures of him. Looks pretty nice.
Yeah, or skinny Julian Rochester.
Correct. That could be a guy that we add in December.
So, yeah. So
we're not going to add him now. I don't think so right now.
No.
But that could be a name we add. So thank you, Jeff, for that. It's going to be interesting. We'll say five.
Okay.
And then we move forward from here.
So there you go. You got five players that, I don't want to say unquestionably, but very.
Sure.
Five players off the top of your head you can name that would start at the University of Alabama. That means you got a long way to go.
But I think we had the same conversation 2 years ago, maybe, Jake and I did, and we could only name like 5 to 7 guys that would play at Alabama.
Yeah, I think
so. You're moving the needle.
So again. Now, where that needle gets moved is in the updates that we have every week at UGASports.com. We cover recruiting every day. So, right now, the number one story, regardless of what's going on in recruiting, has to be Justin Fields. Guy might not even make a decision for a month or two, or he might make one as soon as while we're on the air.
We've had a lot of recruits automatically on verbal.
You know, getting Zamir White, getting a Justin Fields, getting guys of that caliber, you know, to come into your program. Now you've got those players that Alabama wants, you know. I remember, you know, getting Malcolm Mitchell, how big that was.
Huge.
You know, that little Georgia-Alabama battle. Guys like that who are, you know, I won't say exactly program changers, but guys that Alabama wants because they can play them. So, all of a sudden, let's look at all the you just had the number 3 class in the nation. You know, Jake Fromm was an Alabama commit.
Yep.
You know, Georgia peels him away. What happens if you get a Justin Fields?
For whatever reason, I don't know why Alabama's not in it more for him, but if they were to get a Justin Fields, not only does it open up your 2018 recruiting, but this question in a year from now is a whole lot more relevant because Justin Fields could play quarterback for anybody in the nation. That's my opinion. I mean, I think that he could go in right now.
He's got offers from all of them anyway.
Correct. So. I think he could go in right now, battle Hurts. I think he could battle Eason.
No, come on.
I think he could battle Eason in the sense that he would give him a run for his money. Eason would definitely be the starting quarterback, no question.
But same with Hurts. Hurts has a year of battle experience.
Sure, but he's also – Fields also has another year of high school left.
Yeah.
If he was coming out, if he was a freshman
he would be battling him as a freshman versus a junior.
I think you'd give him a battle, yeah.
Okay.
I think
don't get me wrong, I'm a big Justin Fields
thing,
but The same reason when everybody was saying, oh, Fromm's going to come take the starting job from Easton.
Correct.
I'm like, no.
Well, now Fromm's not even talked about. People don't even talk about Fromm. Well, it's how Fields can jump Fromm and Easton. it's how he can
jump.
Well,
we always
both
talk about the number two quarterback on the team is always the most popular guy.
Correct.
Now it's
the third one that's not even on the team.
he's not even committed yet.
He can beat both of them out, blindfolded.
Yeah. But it's a good point, though, when you look at what everybody wants to move on to, the guy backing him up. But I think Kirby Smart really nailed down the lid on any quarterback controversy during SEC Media Day, saying, no, we got a starter. And he's right.
And he's exactly
don't get
right.
Wrong. And I'm probably the biggest Jake Fromm fan you could find because
Jake Roos. Jake Roos is number one Fromm fan.
He's a fanboy.
Yeah, Fromm fanboy club is run by.
And
Jake
he might
Roos.
Be watching now. So, yeah. Haha, take that, Jake.
And he's also kind of ugly. Yeah, and we can't sit next to him. He's got this BO problem. Nah. Jake was big on him long before anybody that.
Yeah.
But the point being, this is a guy who's very talented. We. A lot of people had him over the summer into this demigod who's going to challenge Eason and take his job, you know. And I think when the coach came out and said, no, look, Coach Donnan said, look, you just invested a year in Eason. What are you going to do with that? And I think in the spring practices we saw, Eason's kind of settling down. He's been here, a year and a half?
Yeah. And I heard a lot of the argument, well, he did so great at G-Day compared to at Eason. But
oh my God.
He was going against second and third and
there
fourth
were
and walk-ons.
On that defensive back.
Which, I mean, he did great. But
sure.
But so many second, third, fourth, and walk-ons he was going against. And I'm like, yeah. So, I mean, pretty much, I mean, yeah, he did very well. But I don't think it was – that much different. I mean, Eason Fromm was not as far separated as a lot of people think.
All right, I'm looking at the questions. I'm getting a lot of people on the Fields update. Dan McDonald, who didn't he coach him in like eighth grade?
Yeah, it was like middle school basketball or something
like
that.
Yeah, he coached Justin Fields. He works at UGA Sports. He's our basketball writer and one of our recruiting writers for football. Dan he covers national basketball events all over the country. He knows the Fields family very well. He went by the high school today, Harrison High School, and talked to some people over there, found out that Justin didn't want to be interviewed, which is understandable. The guy's just been hounded relentlessly, nonstop.
Constantly.
And Dan came to our board and kind of shared his thoughts, and we're not going to give those away on a podcast. That's about, that's for our readers at UGASports.com. Be sure you swing by and get a subscription there. But I can narrow it down like this. He honestly believes, as do most of us, that it is a Florida State-Georgia battle for Justin Fields. Justin is very close. I don't think he's like 75-25% on either one. I think it's a 50-50. There are people out there that we know who say that Justin has told people he's coming to Georgia. There are people at Florida State who say that Justin has told recruits and players down there that he's coming to Florida State. So, where's he going? I think he is legitimately torn. I could be wrong. He may have told. He may be committed. And to me, even if you told the coaches at Georgia, the players at Georgia, the recruits at Georgia that you're coming.
We've heard that before.
We've heard that before. He just took a visit to Florida State. He could have changed his mind. In other words, Justin doesn't want to be harassed for up-to-the-minute updates.
Oh, yeah.
But I think a lot of that comes down to the media and the fans want to know, has anything changed in the last 15 minutes, last visit?
And,
so.
And from what we've gathered, it seems like things are changing.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where we're not getting, direct information from him, but we're getting it from sources and we're hearing, oh, yeah, he loves Georgia. Oh, yeah, he loves Florida State.
Yeah.
But we can't get a direct contact to him because he's wanting to kind of keep it private now.
Well, one of the reasons you want to keep it private, this is not a kid that's trying to build up drama about his decision.
No.
I think he's trying to work it out.
Yeah.
Now, again, we've had one of our greatest insiders of all time go on our message board and give us a note that has all the Georgia fans cheering. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but there's a guy on our board by the name of Bulldog Bob who's just he's an insider. Everybody wants to know who he is.
No one
knows who he is. And when he went on our board and said, hey, Isaiah Wilson's coming to Georgia, everyone was like, you're crazy. There's no way a five-star offensive tackle
from New York.
New York is going to come. Yeah, and he was right. And he's nailed more recruiting scoop and coach's scoop and real stories than anybody I can think of. And no, I take that back. There's maybe five or six other diehard, fantastic insiders on our board that will, we're only as good as our sources, and we have great sources at UGA Sports. And he went on there and said some stuff that got Georgia fans excited. And we've exchanged some messages, and he pointed this out. He said, look, Georgia feels great about where they are. He thinks that Fields is going to probably pick Georgia, but he said something very wise. He said, things change, and I know people want to make fun of that. Oh, you know, that's what everybody says to cover their ass when it comes to recruiting, but I cannot – I'm going to guess six. At least six different times I've had a story before a kid announced. You know, kid's about to – remember a tight end that's going to Clemson. I've been going to Georgia. Call the kid. He says, yeah, I'm going to announce it today at 3 o'clock. I'm like, can I get a quote? He goes, sure. Here's why I picked Georgia. Here's what the coaches said when I told them. So I've got the story ready to go. We're waiting on the kid to put on the hat and announce it to everybody. And he reaches down, he picks up a Clemson hat and puts it on. So I've got a story with quotes on why he committed to Georgia. This has happened at least six. I mean, it's more. I know it's more than four, not quite seven in that range. So,
and this is what happens with 18-year-old kids.
Yeah, because, you know, somebody could talk to him. So, in other words, and Bulldog Bob stipulated this because we saw this with Derrick Brown.
Yep.
Derrick Brown's like, hey, I'm coming to Georgia. Okay. Coaches are expecting him. And then that morning, Bulldog Bob came on the board and said, yeah, he's changed his mind. This is not going to happen. And everyone's like, oh, Bob, you're wrong.
Fake insider.
You're a fake. And it's like, no, I'm able to tell you not only what the coaches thought last night, but here's what they found out this morning,
yep,
long before the guy made an announcement. So the guy's accurate. He believes good things are going to happen between Georgia and Fields. I went and checked out with the Florida State insiders. They have a Bulldog Bob. They have a couple of them.
They have Seminole Sam, I think.
Whoever it is, they have some fantastic insiders there who are just as confident that Florida State is getting Justin Fields. So we don't know. And now, if you go to UGASports.com, I mean, it's 27 cents a day, people. Come on. You know, go there and you can read reams and reams and reams of material about Justin Fields. But you can read what our insiders are saying. You can read what we're saying. There's a lot of stuff that we don't mention on the podcast that you need to check out. But where it stands with Justin Fields right now is we think he's close to deciding.
Yeah.
He and his family say it's going to be later. If he's truly going back and forth, I could definitely see it be a situation. Ooh, hello.
Just got wings onto the set, guys. Sorry, we are looking through a lot.
Thank you, hello. Josh Collins.
Well, there we go. Set of wings. So for all you listening to this while you're working out or driving home, Josh Collins, the owner of Champions here, just set up a plate of wings in front of us. So we'll probably have about a 14-minute pause here while we're
Go ahead, Dave. Talk some stats.
Dave. So send in your questions for Dave now.
Yeah.
But anyway, so if you go to UGASports.com, you can get all our information on Justin Fields. And here's the thing. Even if Georgia doesn't get him, you still got two fantastic quarterbacks, but you got to have a quarterback in this class.
Oh, boy. And we have a great dropback passer, a great dropback passer. It would be great to have a little running in it.
Well, and that's why everyone that says, oh, he's not going to Georgia, and this is one thing I almost chimed in on some of these Florida State fans when I was reading their message board at warchant.com. Great guys down at Warchant. These are not homers. These are guys that know their business. They have sources unlike you would never believe. But the guys at War Chant, you know, a lot of the fans on there are like, oh, there's no way this kid's going to go sit behind two five-star quarterbacks. Justin doesn't believe he sits behind two five-star quarterbacks. To me, it comes down to this. Does he honestly believe Georgia is going to change its offense to fit him? And he thinks they are because when you see practice next Monday, if we get to watch any of it, we're going to see the Georgia quarterbacks practicing some run-pass option. It's going to be in that first game, that second game. They're going to do that more. Does he believe that Jim Chaney is going to change the offense to fit him? Because he knows when he was at practice watching Eason and Fromm and even Terry Godwin try to do the run-pass option, he's like, oh, I can do it way better than those guys. And he can. So if you're changing the offense, then you're not sitting behind two five-star guys.
I don't think Georgia fans want to see Terry Godwin throw another pass for Georgia.
No. Well, he pointed this out. He goes, look, when Terry's in there, every defense knows he's not going to throw it.
Correct.
So, I mean, who are you trying to fool? So he knows that, look, if I get out there, they know I damn well throw it. So he's ready to line up under, you know, in that shotgun, get the ball, then take off. And we've seen how deadly accurate he is. I mean, a lot of people want to just, you know, oh, he's a pair of legs. This kid's very bright.
Very
and
bright.
And he won the accuracy competition over Trevor Lawrence at the Rivals camp. I'm not saying he just, you know, beat out a bunch of scrubs in the accuracy contest. He went up against our number one guy in the rankings. And when the rankings are updated, he might move up.
So to beat the man, you got to beat the man.
Yep. All right, let's hit up some other questions.
Yeah, you know, some of the questions that are coming in, they really want to talk about fall preview.
That and the wings, by the way.
Yeah, they wanted, well, they did want to know how are the wings made. They are smoked, and they are with sweet heat. Smoked here at Champions Chicken, so it's a little different taste. Very good, something that you won't get anywhere else. But a couple questions we had coming in. Make sure you guys send in your questions now.
Bulldog Bob is just like E.F. Hutton.
Yeah, I saw that. That was great.
Best 27 cents a day you will spend. Thank you, Clint Edwards.
But we did have some questions about the fall preview with fall camp coming up. Some positions that you know we think is a little too good, might be even better than we think, and then positions that need a little bit of work. So that was a question that I know that we had come in earlier in the show.
I like the one about, will Andrew Thomas take left tackle?
Yeah.
I mean, tackles is a big time position to see what happens.
Well, you got to replace them both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I know that the offensive line right now, as Georgia likes it, the freshman that is impressing the most right now is Andrew Thomas.
Really?
Yeah, and so I do know that for a fact is that Andrew Thomas is really impressive so far. And one thing that's really kind of been Andrew Thomas the whole time is he kind of stayed consistent, and then right there at the end of the recruiting period when he was in the All-Star game, really stepped it up a notch through practice and through the game, and then he made his way to Georgia. So he had that momentum going for him. He's since carried that over since he's been at Georgia. But my source said, wait till we get the pads on these guys, though. That's the big thing with the freshmen. Isaiah Wilson right now, still a little bit out of shape.
He's in his New York weight right now?
He's kind of in that New York weight, so he's getting accustomed to that heat. That was a big question that we had for a long time.
I said that when we went down to Orlando and saw him in the Under Armour game. You know, in those first few practices, he's sitting there on a knee, you know.
Correct.
Because it was, now granted, it was December 29th, but
it's
still
80
degrees and humid as hell, and he was.
It's a good thing the first three games are night games.
Yeah.
By the way, first time since 66, the first three games are night games to open the season.
Really?
Was from Patrick Garvin. He came up with that.
And Patrick, you know what? Our historian.
And by the way, 1966, Georgia won the SEC. So maybe that was the first one under Dooley. So.
Interesting.
To speak a little bit more about that offensive line, though, those two guys, those freshmen. So Isaiah needs to drop a little bit of weight, but from what I've heard, really hard worker, gaining a lot of respect. Mm-hmm. So those are two guys that a lot of people have questions about. I think Andrew Thomas right now is more ready to jump in.
Well, then to the reader's question, Andrew Thompson at left tackle, I could see that.
Yeah.
Andrew Thomas is a prototypical left tackle. 100%.
Do you think by game, like starting game one, or you think by game three or four or five?
No, I don't think at all. I mean, yeah. Isaiah Wynn is, to me, your left tackle for the thing. But that's where I see him backing up. And then I see big Isaiah Wilson working out at right tackle.
Yep.
And I think when people ask me, like, how does the season look for Georgia? I said, well, one of the biggest questions is offensive line. It's what the offensive line is now and how quickly they could get it to where they want it to be.
There's two questions for me for the entire season. Offensive line, where you're replacing three of your starters off of a bad unit. I shouldn't say bad, just not a unit that
below average.
Below average. Yeah, and a unit that did not do what you wanted them to do.
Yeah.
And it's not for the fact that, you know, Greg Pike moved out to right tackle. He's a guard. You know, he moved out there. Brandon Cablano's playing center for only second time in his life, you know. Tyler Catalina comes in. He was not the answer, left tackle.
They tried.
So now here's the thing. You got to replace those three guys with three guys who couldn't beat him out last year, or three freshmen, or a JUCO transfer. So
and once again, we're switching positions over, too.
Yeah, and then, you know, Lamont Gilliard moving over. You know, maybe he moves back. It gets real interesting there when it comes to creating that offensive line. And the other one's special teams. You know, who's your kicker? Who's your punter? Who's your return guy?
Nobody talks about that, but that's a huge one.
It's a third of the game. And I don't want to, you know, special teams, offense, defense.
Correct.
You got to think about it. The game starts with a special teams play.
It's not the XFL when everyone just runs in there.
It starts with a special teams play. It's a kickoff or a kick return on your end. You can either give up great field position or you can get great field position.
And a special teams play always hurts you or helps you some way throughout the game.
So
how many times has Georgia fans just like cringe?
Missed an extra point.
And the question comes up, who's the punter? Who's the kicker? I don't know.
We'll find out against App State.
There's a good question from Tyler. Tyler Woods wonders, will Robert Beal qualify?
Still kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're less than a week away, and we don't know. We were told, you know, that he was supposed to be in classes, but he's not.
Yeah.
Same with Devontae Wyatt.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think Beal's still waiting on a test score and he's still waiting on a couple points. People say, oh, it's just a couple points. I don't remember it. I don't know if you ever took the SAT, Dave. I took it. And to just raise it up a couple points, it's almost a miracle. So, you know, it's one of those things where we're definitely monitoring it closely. We've got our spies on campus that are on UGASports.com letting us know, oh, I think I saw Robert Beal. No, you didn't. It was a false Beal. But, no, we will be on top of that if they do show up.
I did get points for spelling my name right on the SAT, so that was...
I think they give you 400 points for that.
I know.
I like what Rich Olenek said. Clearly the kicker is the transfer kid that came in. They put on scholarship. You know, the writing's on the wall, Rodrigo. Because, you know, you first thought it's got to be Rodrigo, but it may not. I mean, again, I'm not going to put the onus of the G-Day game on him, but, yeah. I mean, there was a time that he was very consistent. There was a time that he wasn't. So when you say it's the guy that transferred.
You don't even know his name.
I don't even know his name. I can't remember them all.
I
they brought in a bunch of different guys. They brought in
Cameron Nizliak is the new punter that they brought in.
Yeah. You got David Marshall somewhere.
You had a graduate transfer.
David Morton or something like that. Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show you that there's about six or seven names right there that we don't even know on the kicking and punting unit.
Well, now, Anthony Dasher is doing a wonderful piece where he kind of looks forward to the fall.
I love that.
He broke down the offensive line by positions. You know, here are the starters. Here are the guys that are like number two. Here are the newcomers, names to watch. We've got a story coming tomorrow about Ben Cleveland. His coach is expecting some stuff out of him. You know, we talked to Brandon Sudge, a great contributor to UGA Sports, has a story on Ben Cleveland tomorrow. Today's was the backfield. Dash broke down the running backs and quarterbacks. Pretty big deal
easy
there.
Enough.
I'm looking forward to when he breaks down the special teams guys. Talked to one of the guys who just graduated, from Columbia or wherever. The guy had a
Nizliak, I think is his name.
Well, then there's a guy with like the two first names I can't keep up with. You know, these are guys that one of them, he's got a chemistry and a biology degree.
Hey, just to throw in something else, Clint Edwards just said, walk-on punter from GAC will join the mix also. So we've got another guy, name, that's going to walk on and join the punting unit.
Yeah, so you got all these different players coming up, you know. But those, to me, when people say, what's Georgia's strength? What are its weaknesses? The weakness is the offensive line. The weakness is its kicking game, you know, our special teams. I think Mecole Hardman returning some kicks will be fantastic, you know. Terry Godwin maybe back there for punts or something like that. I'm excited about that, you know. Not so much worried about it. Strengths, defensive line, young but
exciting.
Talented.
Tight ends.
Tight ends, running backs, you know.
What could be a strength, but it hasn't happened as of yet, the relationship of the quarterback to the wide receiver being on the same page. Yeah. I think it screams that we have it, but we have to perform it on the field.
Here's my one question.
If they can catch it and not drop it.
Here's my one question going into fall camp. Georgia brought in a JUCO offensive tackle that we all thought was going to be a plug and play. DeMarcus Hayes. Mm-hmm. Is he going to be able to step up? We know that in spring practice, he never really broke that first team. He was always in that second team. That's my biggest question is because they need two tackles.
Yeah, and Dyshawn Slim stepped up. Pat Allen came on big.
Sean Fogarty.
Sean, that's the guy y'all need to
remember the name.
Listen to everybody that's tuning in to the UGA Sports Live podcast.
C-C-R.
For everybody who's watching us on 11live.com. And who's here in with us at Champions as we look around to say hi to everybody. Sean Fogarty, that's a guy that might – think about it. If he could start at center, then you can move Galliard back to guard, and he is one of the top-rated guards in the country.
He is indeed. Now, I'm a big Galliard fan myself, top three guard in the SEC according to PFF rankings. I look at those religiously. They grade each play. He was a top three guard in the SEC, just so you know.
So all of a sudden, you know, you got some pretty good moving parts there.
You do.
You know. And all of a sudden, maybe Andrew Thomas comes on and he's your right tackle, you know.
The thing with moving parts is, though, you only have so long, Roddy. And speaking of that, fall camp is right around the corner.
Yeah.
That's where you got to find your five guys.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden, you know, we're down to, 40 days, something like that?
I think it might be, right at 40 or right under.
Yeah.
It's right there.
So let's say you're at 40 days, 39 days until you have your first kickoff. You know, let's say Fogarty comes in. All of a sudden, you can move Galliard back to guard.
Now you're getting a little continuity.
Well, not only that, if you had to replace your right tackle, Galliard is already sitting there telling him what to do.
Yep.
In other words,
he's one position closer.
This is something that Dave would be able to attest to when he talks about the difference guys being moved around. When you have to play two new guys side by side.
Dangerous.
Yeah. When has it worked in the past? Right here, Dave, on live
1966.
Television. 1966. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying. But it hasn't.
It's tough. You know, if it's okay, you're like, okay, this guy went down, and you put in somebody who's inexperienced. And that's the thing about Georgia's replacements. All the guys that you're moving out there, they didn't play a whole lot last year.
Correct.
The guys that were on the roster last year, Dyshon Sims for one, you know, Pat Allen, you know, they didn't see the field a whole hell of a lot.
Even with the troubles that Georgia had,
that's my point.
At the positions,
and that's why. And I don't want to hammer this and make people feel bad about them, but when I say you're replacing three guys with other players who could not beat them out, so anybody that had a problem with Brandon Cablano or Tyler Catalina or Greg Pike,
those guys that are already on campus couldn't beat them out.
Exactly, the guys that were here, they were better than what you had. So you're replacing them with guys who, granted, are a year older. Pat Allen looks completely different.
Yep.
Okay. But Dyshon Sims couldn't beat out those guys, but now he's a starter. Is that good or bad? Well, he's a year older. Maybe that's a great thing.
That's the argument right now.
But then you're going to have freshmen who also haven't played.
Correct.
So regardless of who takes over those spots, you have a bunch of inexperienced guys out there. Now, your running back, quarterback, tight ends, wide receivers, you got to feel great about it.
Yeah, you're fine with that.
You love your fullback. I love Christian Payne.
Oh, yeah.
I love a lot of those guys. You know, Moore, those guys are fantastic.
But
you get that offensive line. So when people say, what's Georgia's outlook like this year? I don't know what it's going to be. Show me that offensive line.
Yeah,
so
Give me five on the line, and then we can talk.
Yeah. So
one question we got in from Nick Stanford. He says, do you think it'll be tough to keep DeAndre Swift off the field this season?
Well, we just saw him squat 500 pounds.
Correct.
Not quite 600, but 500 pounds. Still.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm just saying, to see Nick Chubb do it at 600.
This is an 18-year-old doing 500
pounds.
Yeah,
this
pounds.
Is a kid who's been on campus, what, since June 1st?
Yeah. I think his dad.
Less than 2 months.
Buddy of mine up in Philly actually works out with his dad. His dad is a monster. His dad is an absolute monster.
So in answer to his question, yeah, it is going to be tough to keep him off because, granted,
he could do so
we're definitely going to see more of Chubb and Michelle on the field at the same time, I believe, because you can use Sony as that slot receiver. Great hands.
And Chubb can catch a pass, too.
He can. But you put him out there. And remember, when you put two running backs on the field, now you've taken a blocker away. And
Christian Payne does work.
Yeah.
He does work.
So Christian Payne, if you want to have a guy out there as lead blocker, who he can also catch.
Yeah, he can.
So I see why you do that. But DeAndre Swift is a special talent.
I think Georgia has the ability to keep him off the field this year. They have that luxury with the running backs that they have. I don't think you want to, though. With the way that running backs...
I say use them.
Yeah, with the way that running backs want to go to the league, unlike Sony and Chubb, most of them like to go after the third year because they know that their legs are only so long.
Well, let's say this. You get up on somebody, and I'm not going to say App State because I think App State's going to be a tough game, but Samford.
Mississippi State. You know. I'm just kidding.
So you get up on Samford. Okay. That's a what time? 7:30 game?
Yeah,
7:30.
So night game. Honestly, I'm not sure that you'd play Nick... I let him rest. You know.
Well, he might get 400 in the first two games. You might be starting a Heisman campaign
point. But, you know, say you take him and Sonny Michelle out of the game. Now you've got Brian Herrien, Elijah Holyfield, DeAndre Swift.
Yeah.
At some point, I'm giving all three of them a chance to run the ball because there's no point in redshirting him. And I think that when Swift comes in, he says, look, the minute you pull Sony out.
Who are you going to have catching the ball?
Exactly. The plays you have designed
for
to
him?
Go to him. Put me and Harry in. Put me, Elijah and me in, and let us run the same plays.
You know when the last time I heard that was? Nicholls State.
Yeah.
And it said, okay, we're gonna only play Chubb and Michelle for maybe like one quarter and let the rest go. No.
Yeah, but I mean,
it did not turn out that way.
If you're gonna assume that you're gonna be in a close game until the last, you know, final minutes with Samford, well, then maybe you will never put DeAndre Swift in because you're fighting for your lives.
I saw something right here. Jeff Fulford said, was it 1997, Dave, UGA started three freshmen on the O-line?
Put Swift to kick return, yes.
So I'll let you think on that one. Yeah, put Swift to kick return, absolutely. Yeah, I think
I do like the results of 97. That was a mighty fighting year, but
indeed,
I'm trying to remember.
And Matt Garman said, in his honest opinion, Swift will be the firm starter in 18 and won't get that spot up until he moves to the league. Zamir White's coming. I don't know. I like Swift. I watched Swift when we had the five-star challenge. He was catching everything out of the backfield. It's not meant for running backs to excel at those five-star challenges. They don't get to run and hit anybody. But Zamir White is a different beast. There's a reason he's called Zeus.
Well, there's also, hey, James Cook might be coming too.
Indeed.
Oh. Now, granted, James Cook is a former Florida State commit. He's a five-star guy on Rivals.com. He's got an older brother you may have heard of.
What's his name? Dalvin. Yeah, he's a first
round. That's not a real name.
He's, no.
No. But, yeah, Dalvin Cook's little brother.
NFL contributor for next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So Dalvin Cook's little brother, who's a five-star in his own right, James Cook, has decommitted from FSU, and I won't say that he's coming to Georgia, but really, really like Georgia's chances of landing this guy. So think about it. You could get 2 5-star running backs in this class.
Yeah. And then you could top it with a 5-star QB. And
who likes to run also?
Well, think about this. So, and we'll get to some of the questions here in a minute. Who do you give recruiter of the year to when, you know, Dell McGee might wind up landing 2 5-star running backs?
And be a big piece in Justin Fields.
Yeah, maybe a big piece of that. But then, you know, Jim Chaney basically gets you 3 5-star quarterbacks in a row, something that's never happened in the history of the Rivals.
Hold on,
era.
But Sam Pittman's got something to say about that. He's got
this year he's going to look guard heavy. Last year he went a little tackle heavy.
He signed, you know, 5-star guy last year, couple, you know, 3 different 4-stars. In the hit. Yeah, everybody but one was a 4-star. And Justin Schaefer, who was the only 3-star in that group that he signed, could have been a 4-star. Yeah. And I know some people think Justin Schaefer is probably one of the guys that comes and grabs a guard position.
And then
he's
this
really
year.
Good. Yeah, so all of a sudden, he might, and as you say, this year, Sam Pittman might wind up with number one, number two guards in the country. One's a 5-star, one could be a 5-star.
Yeah.
And he could be the third best recruiter just on offense.
Yeah.
And the number one and number two player.
So you're like, I just gave you all these 5-star offensive linemen, and I'm behind Dell McGee and Jim Chaney. Are you kidding me?
We've got a lot of questions popping in about the defense and defensive recruiting. But the big thing, though, that everybody's talking about that I want to touch on, people are saying Mecole Hardman. What are your guys' thoughts on it? That people are saying high risk, high reward. What are your true thoughts on Mecole and his production this year?
I mean, I have never seen too much of him, so I can't say.
And I think
what
that's why everybody's so ready to see him, because they saw what he could do in high school. He didn't do it last year, but he has the potential to do it. Roddy, you've been around the game for a long time. You watched Georgia for a long time. You've seen a lot of these guys come through, not produce at Georgia. I don't think Mecole's going to be like that.
No,
but
Mecole
at
has,
the same time, what is it a realistic expectation for Georgia fans to see Mecole on the field this year?
As a wide receiver, I don't see it happening a whole lot.
I don't
simply
either.
Because
that's the thing.
When you line up, and this was, we saw this last year when everyone said, "Oh, well, it's going to be, you know, Terry Godwin and Isaiah McKenzie, and then you know Mecole. Who else?" And I'm like, no. Actually, those two guys come last. First, it's going to be, Jason Stanley,
Riley
Ridley, Michael Chigbu.
Will be up
well,
there.
Those two were first because they needed blocking wide receivers, and then they're like. After those two, then we'll put in either Godwin or McKenzie. And I was like, "What? Wait, what? Really?" And that's how we saw it. I mean, every time they lined up, you'd see number 82 run out there. You'd see number 2 run out there. And then you look to the sideline to see if, you know, was it McKenzie or Godwin coming out. Then, you know, towards the end of the year, saw McKenzie getting a lot more plays.
And saw Wims and saw
Ridley
getting
Ridley
involved more by the end of the year.
Exactly. So those guys are out there. So right now, he's like, okay, well, who's your blockers? You know, who's your big guy?
Javon Wims.
Javon Wims, I see him running out there. I see Riley Ridley running out there.
Chigbu.
And Terry Godwin. The connection, though, that Terry and Eason had in the spring, I think that's developed pretty well. So, and like I said, you got Chigbu too. Where does Mecole Hardman fit in all that? So I don't really see him. I mean, yeah, he'll get in there because they use at one point, I think you did a survey last year.
Gosh.
No, it was Trent that did the guy who played.
Correct.
And they're like 9 different wide receivers got into the
game.
Yeah, so he definitely gets out there because you're moving guys in and out. But to me, if you want to say, well, does he high risk, high reward? No, this is a return guy because he's electric with the ball. He can catch it. He can juke you with it. He has that it factor about him when you talk to him, when you see him play. He could be a NFL return guy, in my opinion.
Can he be like a Percy Harvin? Someone's asking about that. But
is he that fast, though?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean,
I think
people have really.
But I don't know Percy fast.
I think
that's it. I mean,
he was.
Because how many
Percy
people,
Harvin was smoking.
Oh, boy.
How many guys did he flat out run that had an angle on Percy?
Percy was a different beast, and Mecole could be that different beast, but I think people just have such high expectations for Mecole, and whether we did it at Rivals ranking him a 5-star or what he did on the field his senior year is what led to that. I just don't know if he's going to be able to work his way into the offense as much as people think. I think that he will.
Yeah, but
I don't think that he's not going to see the field at wide receiver.
He had 14 practices to learn to be a wide receiver.
Correct.
And he wasn't running with the ones and twos.
Correct.
I mean, there are a couple times, but he wasn't up there. Give him another 24 practices. Give him some games in all the week. Could be a situation like we saw last year where, you know, we knew that Riley Ridley was on the field, I mean, on the roster, but we didn't see him a whole lot. Then he came on towards the end. Javon Wims, you know, got the playbook in, understood it, started lighting people up, and then Javon Wims is in there. So maybe midway through, all of a sudden, he's outplayed Jackson Stanley. He's outplayed, you know, Javon Wims. You know, he's making big blocks. It, again, you got to block if you want to be out there. Or, you know, something happens to Terry Godwin, because that's, to me, I think that's where he comes in. He plays behind Terry, so that could be it.
I think that, I think whenever Kirby Smart gets asked about Mecole, it's always, he's improving, but it's never been one of those things where he's really, you know, talked about it a whole lot. People are talking about defense side of the ball, though, unless you see a question that you want to hit.
No, I was laughing at people complaining that our wings might get cold.
Roddy has this rule that he doesn't like us eating during the podcast.
It's so. My equipment.
So no, we all want to.
Yeah, we do. We're going to eat them later, I promise you. But
no, see, once we turn the camera off, I threaten these guys with their job if they reach for my wing. So, no.
Exactly. No, we did get a question, though, that came in about, can Del McGee, since he's doing so good recruiting, can he recruit defensive linemen? and it brings a good point because right now with
– Yes, he can, actually.
Yeah, and he can. The big thing is Georgia was already going to be thin at defensive line. They were going to need a couple big playmakers in the 2018 class. It's now becoming even more potent for that to happen because of Robert Beal and Devontae Wyatt. It's still unknown. So,
yeah, and those guys could – I mean, they might show up for the first day of practice. They could get something through the clearinghouse any day now and find out about it, or they might wind up going JUCO. We just don't know.
Yeah. But with that being said, Trey Scott comes into a situation where he's got a ton of great players in Athens right now that he can work with and build and mold, like Rochester, Michael Carter, guys like that, that he can really get to the next level. But he's going to have to bring a whole other class in, and with the uncertainty of two of your defensive linemen, 2018 becomes ever so more, you know, big in terms of recruiting for Georgia. Everybody's focused on Fields. Everybody's focused on skill positions. The defensive line right now, though, is
something. Yeah, for 5 minutes. Let's say Fields commits tomorrow, and then all of a sudden, you know, Kyrus Jackson jumps in behind him.
Josh Van.
Luke Ford jumps in behind him. Josh Van jumps in behind him. Like, hey, great, I'll get all these offensive guys. Now, where are the defensive players? As much as people are freaking out about Justin Fields, I'd be like,
it's going to be
just as much. What about Sandage? You know? What about guys like that, you know?
And that's the thing. The big name that we've heard and that we've been reporting on over at UGA Sports, Rick Sandage, but he's really torn.
He's now a lot of talk about South Carolina.
It's where his mother went to school, yeah. And you know, he really does it up on Twitter to where whatever school he's at, he's hyping them up, and he's getting follows from all those people. So he's one of those guys where if he's at your school, you're thinking he's coming. When he goes to a different school, you're like, oh man, he's never going to come back to Georgia. He loves it at South Carolina. He loves it at Michigan. You know, but he's one of those guys where I think he's top priority. But then after that, it's kind of how we were talking 3 months ago when Justin Fields wasn't in the picture. Georgia was kind of scrambling for quarterbacks.
Yeah, they had offered 22, and 18 of them had committed elsewhere.
Correct. We're going to see an influx of offers going out to defensive linemen, and I think that's one of the things that's going to happen rather than later.
That's got to be a priority. I guess the coaches get to go out, what, September 1st?
It's coming up, yeah.
Yeah, it won't be long before the coaches are actually able to go out on the road and watch kids in high school, you check out their high school games. You got to think that Kirby Smart, Trey Scott, Del McGee, Mel Tucker, Kevin Scherer, heck, even Glenn Schumann, every one of them out there going, find defensive tackles. Mm-hmm. And not just warm bodies, because you don't win the SEC with just an average defensive tackles.
Go find me another Devontae Wyatt. He was kind of overshadowed. Nobody heard of him.
Yeah.
And he's the type of kid that they need to go find now that's just a diamond in the rough. Because everybody that is 4-star, 5-star has been looked
but
at.
But even then, you know, they saw him last summer, and I don't say they passed, but they kind of, you know, waffled
correct.
A bit. You know, they're like, and he came to a camp. I was there. Kirby had somebody run him, you know, and they stopped the stopwatch, and then he was going there showing Kirby the time, and goes, Kirby said, I don't want to see if he can run 40 yards. I want to see how he runs 10 yards. So they made him do 10-yard splits while this camp was going on. So they worked him out pretty hard. He came to a lineman camp, and it wasn't one of those instantaneous offer things. You know, but they watched him play, went after him, got him, you know. In other words, he didn't blow their socks off like a Trent Thompson did.
Correct.
It's going to be the exact same situation because I don't know that there's all these defensive tackles out there right now. They're just knocking down the door.
I guess
when was the last time we saw an offer go out?
Yeah, it's been a while. I was just about to say that. And I think
and they've got film. It's not like they have to see these kids in person, but that's got
to
be their priority.
Offers out to other positions, but just not the one that Georgia fans want.
I think they're really chasing after Rick Sandage. After that, it kind of drops off a little bit. But I think one name, if you're looking for names, would be Tramell Walther out of Hinesville. I think that he's very high on the Dogs. I think he might be waiting, you know, on a committable offer. Another name, Jalen Alexander out of Virginia. He's got the Dogs in his top five. But then after that, you're kind
of
reaching.
And the Georgia Tech guys think they have a good chance of picking up Alexander.
Correct.
You know, but I think Walther, Tramell would probably be. And that's not a big guy.
He's not. He's 6'3", 270. And when I watched him, I thought he was more of a defensive end. We're projecting him at defensive tackle. I think he could add a little more weight. He was a guy in the Rising Seniors that was there that never really stood out to us. So that gives you an indicator of where Georgia's going down the list right now. There are three big-time defensive tackles in Missouri that Georgia's after: Trevor Trout, Ronnie Perkins, and Daniel Carson. Missouri's doing a heck of a job trying to keep those guys home. So it's one of those things where once the coaches get out, you're going to see a lot more defensive tackle offers go out. I think they're good, though, at strong side defensive end and weak side defensive end with the amount of prospects that they're recruiting right now and big-name guys. But it's defensive tackle that I think this
works. Yeah, your hog in the middle, you know. Yep. Got to have those guys. Mike and Melissa asks, I'm from Albany. Are we going to flip Otis Reese?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, it is.
Otis Reese, if you're not familiar with him, safety linebacker hybrid out of same school that Aubrey Solomon came out of, Lee County, down there. They're both committed to Michigan. Well, Aubrey Solomon's already up there, but Otis is committed to Michigan. The crazy thing was, though, when we started to hear about it, Otis was 100% Michigan. He was trying to get Aubrey up there. Now it seems to be the opposite way around. Otis is kind of wavering. Aubrey's obviously, three more times. Yeah. He's obviously on
How obvious is it?
He's on campus now trying to get Otis to come up there with him. But Otis is one of those guys that I think fits in that safety linebacker hybrid role that Georgia's really looking at. They're really putting on the pressure for him. So as of right now, I think he sticks with Michigan. I think you got to get him on campus for all the visits.
That's a good point. Get him on campus and then change it up there.
Well, I mean, we need safeties now because Georgia just trading maybe not where he was.
Well, I mean, I think they picked up so many safeties last year that
right now. It scared them off.
Yeah, they need some cornerbacks. And, you know, for a while there, we thought Trey Dean was going to commit to Georgia almost, any minute, you know? But right now, he was supposed to be July 31st for Dean.
Yeah, well,
from something what, like that. Yeah, he had a date set up, and then
now it's not. It was the 31st, you're right.
Yeah, so now Trey has moved his thing back, his decision back. And I don't know that Georgia's backed off or if he's just reconsidered. You know, you always hear half of one of those stories. Correct. You never get into it. But right now, I think Georgia's really looking very hard for cornerbacks.
Yeah. Cornerback right now, it's one of those things where Georgia's looking at a couple guys, but they have Wild Goose already. Yeah. Two-star out of
– We just visited Florida.
Correct. And it's one of those things
where – Miami.
It was the Florida's big recruiting weekend.
Yeah, it was.
He's one of those two-stars that you're going to start seeing climb up the boards. He's getting looked at a little bit more. Isaac Taylor Stewart out of California.
He'd be great to get, but you're never going to get him.
It's a pipe dream, guys. So let's go ahead and knock him off.
That is a bad man.
Oh, yeah. One guy that I think George kind of missed the ball on was J.C. Horn, son of Joe Horn, South Carolina and Alabama. Other than that, though, what names are sticking out? Christian Tuck was at one time. He's falling off the map. You know, Trey Douglas was at one time. He committed to Vanderbilt. So at cornerback right now, you know, it's anyone's guess. I think they have a lot of options at safety, but they don't want to go that route. So they're trying to find those wild gooses again.
Well, he brings up Nick Youngblood, brings up Derek Johnson. I mean, is he a corner, though?
He's one of those guys where he probably
plays it.
He could play corner. He's one of those guys you could put at defensive end in high school and he'd probably do well.
I'd kind of compare him to D'Angelo Gibbs.
I would, too. It's the exact replica of Gibbs. They're both the exact same player. And I think Gibbs will end up.
Oh, he could be that star guy.
Correct. And I think Tyreek Johnson, if you take him, which obviously is a take, if he were to come to Georgia, I think they would recruit him as a cornerback. But once he got onto campus, it would be that same thing with Gibbs, where he's just – you get him on campus and you get him into that weight program, he's going to get so much bigger that he's going to eventually grow out of that cornerback position. So, you know, it's
– Raj brings up a good question.
Yeah.
He says, will Wild Goose sign with UG?
I think it was one of those things where Wild Goose wasn't getting looked at. Georgia looked at him, gave him the love. It's a big-time SEC program. He committed. Florida and Florida State are now jumping in on him. Because he's that in-state kid, Miami's loaded. I think Miami's already got 45 kids committed, so I don't think they have any more room.
They have the number one recruiting class in the nation right now.
Yeah, good job, Mark Rick.
Way to do it when you get down there.
Yeah. Anyways, but Florida and Florida State, though, I think are going to jump in on him. As of right now, it's 50-50.
And we had a story with him, and he says he's still 100% committed, you know, and why would you not go to the – Florida thing and pick up that offer and show what you can do.
So it's sort of like what the Max Ray did with not getting a lot of love and then all of a sudden getting the love from the major schools and then all of a sudden going back to his home state school and stuff.
Yeah, and you mentioned the guy Max Ray, the offensive tackle out of Tennessee, who was committed to Georgia And I really think that at some point they thought that Georgia was the best offer they were going to get. Then all of a sudden Alabama came a-calling and Ohio State and Clemson and everybody with these, you know, big rings and conference championships. And, you know, I think that, you know, maybe there might have been some talk of him playing guard that kind of soured him on Georgia. And all of a sudden, you know, now he's committed elsewhere.
Yes,
but you, it's a great point. The Rashad Wallace, and this happens, you know, a kid commits to Vandy, commits to Louisville, and all of a sudden he's, you know, in Georgia, and all of a sudden Georgia looks at him and goes, hey.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, if Louisville's willing to take you,
forgot
we need to.
About
and
you.
Not only that, you go to a couple of his games, you're like, okay, imagine this. A kid matures between his junior and senior year and also starts playing a lot better. And you're like, wow, you know, last year you were questionable. You know, we were kind of on the fence. This year we want you. They put on the hard press and you flip him.
So
you get a kid
in like Wild Goose. Do some growth spurts?
Yeah, exactly. You get a kid Wild Goose who's a slight guy. He's not big.
Yep.
And all of a sudden he goes to Florida and blows up their Friday Night Lights camp. And all of a sudden Florida's like, look, you just moved up five spots on our cornerback board. We're going to do whatever it takes to keep you in-house.
Yep. And that it happens every year. It seems like Deontay Williams is one of those that Georgia had. Then now he's gone the JUCO route, but he's committed to Florida now. So it happens every year.
Georgia tries to pull kids out of Louisiana. LSU decides, oh, we want them, and you can forget it. You know, Georgia would love to be able to pull out, you know, Pierce Quick or Clay Webb out of Alabama.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, they stand a chance with Clay Webb, but definitely not Pierce. But again, it's just tough, you know. Georgia was one of the first to offer them. Then all of a sudden, Alabama pops up and Auburn pop up, and they're like, oh, well, that changes the thing there. So with Wild Goose, who knows?
Yeah.
But you need him.
One name that did pop up from Nick Stanford, we've got about 5 minutes left, guys, so if you want to touch on anything after this. Aaron, is it Brule, since he's from Louisiana, do you think? He's got that Brule.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay. Aaron Brule. Well,
that's like your favorite dessert, isn't it?
It is. One, I like
or
the
bananas foster. No.
Well, I'll go some creme brulee right now.
Okay, there we go. So
and some bananas, banana pudding right here at Champions.
Creme Aaron Brulee out of Louisiana was big, heavy TCU lean. I think he might be headed Georgia's way, but he's a guy that's another safety and could maybe fit that cornerback role. So you're getting those guys that all look like D'Angelo Gibbs. So it's one of those.
Which is not a bad thing.
No. Yeah, I mean, what are we fighting about here, guys? But last 5 minutes.
Okay, I would like A.
Yeah,
Georgia just got a commit from a couple. Oh, not just now, but a couple days ago.
Do that. To
I was going
to
say it, Dave. I can't, man. I really can't.
And I want to know about this, like this 13-year-old kid that we that popped up.
Talking about the eighth grader,
the eighth grader that's 9'7", 785 pounds, and wears a size 55 shoe.
Georgia just offered a kid out in at a middle school. He's 6'6". 300 and I think 45 pounds,
something like that,
something ridiculous.
Yeah, he's 13.
Who's a couple years older than your son? And can you picture?
No, Ollie's 13.
Is he 13? I thought he's 12. Okay, sorry, Ollie.
So, and Ollie's first practice was today. So
can you picture him?
I can imagine him going up against a 6'6", 300. You know, what are you? That's just. You know what I would do with that kid? I'd line him up in the backfield.
Let's go, buddy.
You just carry it.
Let's go. Carry the team, Mountain, Game of Thrones.
We're gonna pound this. You can see the little nose guard get up there, you know, a seventh or eighth grader. You know, he sees that monster coming. He's like, hell no, coach.
Yep.
I'm just jumping out of the way.
I'm going to play tennis. Exactly. I'm going to follow in Greg McGarry's footsteps.
That's a kid that makes all the fall ball for baseball very popular.
Exactly. Yeah, start seeing signs.
It's amazing the number of people that lost their mind. Why the hell is Georgia offering a kid who's only 13 years old? Well, you know, they did it with Dylan Moses. They did it with Kandichi. You know, they did it with Tariq Johnson, guys like that.
Year.
You know, there are guys who, when you see them in eighth grade, you know, Dominic Blaylock, Georgia offered him before he stepped foot, you know, in Walton High School. I went to a 7-on-7. He had just completed eighth grade. He's at the Corky Kell 7-on-7. He's one of the best players out there. Can't touch him. Didn't have an offer. So, I mean, maybe he was 14. Heaven forbid. He's, you know. He might have been 30. I don't know. But point being, you can't coach 6'6", 340 pounds.
I say within a few years, we're going to have someone that offers a scholarship, but someone's not even born yet.
Yeah. Dude, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, you start looking, hey, Thomas Davis, you have any children? What?
Exactly.
Your wife's pregnant? We got an offer for you in 18 years.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Well, it's a girl. Fine. Bring her on.
Speaking of Thomas Davis, going to the Circle of Honor next week with Reese Hoffa, who's definitely deserving. Caldwell, the diver, and Nicole Barber, the softball player, all four well-deserved.
Very good. The Circle of Honor, I do like that. They have some fantastic people in that. Reese Hoffa, one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet.
If you watch his, he was on the Jay Leno show a couple years ago, unbelievably funny. And there's even YouTube clips of him doing Rubik's Cubes.
For
I think those big. Now,
he'd destroy it instead.
Yeah, his hand is about the size of the dinner.
He makes tackles like a golf ball.
Yeah, he does. And, I mean, each finger is, you know, about as big around as my wrist. He's got these huge hands. He holds that shot, but he just flings it.
And one of the greatest guys ever.
But, yeah, but he's got a great handshake. He doesn't try to kill you because, you know, you're already intimidated enough. But he represents Georgia everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, hell, half the time he's practicing here in Athens. But this is a guy who reps Georgia very well, just like, you know, Thomas Davis does, just like, you know.
Barber and Colwell.
They all do, you know. They gets constantly putting Georgia out there. And love the fact that Reese is around and he gets that honor. It's just big.
Yep. And last question that we got says, Patrick Brown says, a name no one's talking about that will be in play as a recruit down the road for the 2018 class. Ask that question in a month once all those guys get on the field, because I think some offers are going to be going out, especially to that defensive line class. Georgia's going to get out there, hit the trail.
They've got to find some defensive line.
And I think you'll have two or three names pop up on that defensive tackle list that we're not privy to as of right now.
Well, that kind of ties in the question we had there about the 13-year-old. Georgia is not – I doubt they run across anybody who they don't know. So all of a sudden a 6'4" – 285-pound defensive tackle pops up. If you are 6'2", 6'3" and above, and you weigh above 270 pounds, there are scouting services out there that have already told Georgia, Florida, LSU, everybody about you. You've been marked down. So it's not like – and maybe you have a kid who was playing basketball, who was a center, who plays football for the first time. Or maybe, you know, there's all these guys from Nigeria that are coming in who are playing their first couple years of football. You know, they're new to the game. But – there are recruiting services that are checking out kids from their ninth grade on. One of our best friends in the business is a guy who owns a recruiting service. Now, this isn't like what we are. We are a news service. You know, people call us recruiting services. We're not. We provide news. It happens to be about recruiting. There are recruiting services to which the coaches subscribe. They pay to be able to get into a database. They're able to say, okay, I'm going down to, Archer versus Appalachian. And it has a list of here's all the guys that we think you should check out. So it's not like there's these guys just pop up out of nowhere. Sleepers, as they call them. No, like, these guys have been looked at because the scouts will go and they will look at a practice. Yep. And they'll get heights and weights on everybody, watch how they move. And the coaches will pay like $30,000 a year to each, you know, different service or more or less. I mean, the prices vary, but they have these services that they go to. When you have a 13-year-old who's 6'6", the message gets out. The guys that they're going to go find are guys who they've probably already known about, but who were on the cusp. They're like, let's see. We didn't offer that guy last year, but he has developed. Or let's say, okay, he was 6'4", 315 pounds. He was fat.
Yeah.
You know, or 350. That kid just dropped 45 pounds. That's the kid we need to offer.
Yeah, it's the coaches know about them, but it's that what I meant, like you just said, they're going out to reevaluate.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. And we don't know. I mean, I'd love to be able to afford those services.
Man,
go through those databases.
I've seen it once.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying you have. But you know what I'm talking about. Yep. And one of the guys that works for that service, he told me, he said, look, by the time they're a junior or senior, I don't even look at them anymore. He goes, you're the ones that are trying to figure out where the hell they're going.
Yeah.
I'm trying to identify them as a freshman or sophomore because that's where he makes his money.
Yep.
Because Georgia wants to start sending that kid mail when he's in ninth grade, when he's in 10th grade, because you want him to come to camp before his 11th grade
year. As a ninth grader or a 10th grader.
Exactly. So you can test him out, see what he can do, and decide whether or not you want to offer him. So there are all these recruiting services that are pounding the pavement trying to find the ninth and 10th graders. And they've already marked them, here's the guy's height. Then they'll update the heights and weights, and the coaches can go in, go to game, let me see who I got. And then the coaches rate them.
Yep.
This guy's a, I don't say five-star, four-star, but they have them in whatever the ranking they do, they move them up. So now all of a sudden maybe they're going to their plan B guys that they didn't offer, and so let's go see which of those guys. And here's the thing, the guys that you want, there's a very few. The guys who almost make the cut, there's a pretty big pool
there.
Chunk. Guys that won't make it, an even bigger one. You know, it's just the law of averages. So all of a sudden, if they go to that plan B, guys, there's a lot of them out there. And it's a long-winded answer to Pat's question, but the point being, we don't know who they are until we actually practice just started in high schools. We're going to go check out some of these high school practices and say, yeah, well, Tramiel is a perfect example. Exactly. Tramiel Walther. It's like, how big are you going to get?
Yep.
So
go check in on him, see if he's gained any weight.
Right. Anyway, with that, we're going to end the show. We want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thanks to 11 Live Sports for letting us be on their page. Thanks to Game Day, 365 Game Day, for letting us put the show on their site. Thanks to Champions here on Baxter. Be sure to come by, get the tamales.
Get the wings.
Put those wings down, or we'll break your fingers. Thanks to, we have a couple of sponsors that are coming on next week. We want to say thanks to them for signing up, and we'll have a big to-do next week. Thanks to Cable East, guys out in Statham, Robert Wall, we appreciate it. And thanks to all of our readers at UGASports.com for giving us a job.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.